Welcome to Pathways to Wisdom, a show about journey and legacy, contribution, and the meaning of life. We all have interesting stories about the paths we have chosen, the people we have touched, and the wisdom that comes with living life to the fullest. We have a choice each day to live into our greatness, and our greatness is informed by what we do, how and who we love, and what we believe about ourselves and others. Here's the host of Pathways to Wisdom, Deborah Brown.
I am so pleased today to have Robert McPhee with me here today. Robert is the founder and president of Heartset, Inc., and the author of Manifesting for Non-Gurus, How to Quickly and Easily Attract Lasting Results. As an expert in experiential learning, peak performance, and leadership, Robert McPhee helps leaders create the results and the experience of life they really, really want. Robert is the former director of training for the Canfield Training Group and a founding member of the Transformational Leadership Council. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and it's always so nice to hear myself introduced. You know, there's something special about that. I appreciate it.
There is something special about that, and when we're talking about our journey and our greatness, I think we do kind of like to hear our name associated with that, and I'm proud to do that for you. So what I would like to do, though, is let you give us what I call your two-minute movie, and that is your life, laser beam style, as far back as you want to go, coming forward to today, sitting here with me. So your two-minute movie, if you please.
Oh, what a great opportunity. Thank you for the question. And I'm going to go right back. I just had a fabulous meeting over lunch with a gentleman who was talking to me about how I got into this business, and he had me reflecting back to my days starting my own business very entrepreneurially out of college, where a friend of mine and I started a valet parking company, and, you know, a couple of Southern California kids having a great time parking cars and making great money and building a business. And then got exposed to the personal development world by bringing Stephen Covey's work in as part of a management training program in our business. And as you know, I'm sure Dr. Covey just passed away a couple weeks ago, I guess it is now. But it was really such a profound impact that his work had on our business and on me personally. And it really lit a fire in me to pursue this kind of work, this personal professional development work. I started reading books and listening to tapes and going to workshops, and had the great fortune of connecting with Jack Canfield, who you mentioned in my bio, and learning from Jack and then working with Jack. I was the director of training for his organization for 4 years and still have a very close working relationship with him. We co-facilitate and create trainings together, and sometimes we just spoke at the same event last week. And he's been a mentor and a teacher to me in a profound way, and really has shaped my work in most ways. And I tell Jack and I tell other people, probably the one thing I would add to my introduction that you so kindly shared is really the biggest impact this work has had on my life has been as a parent. I have three kids. My oldest is off at college right now. I have two are in high school, and they've grown up in an environment where they understand concepts like responsibility and consequences and possibility and focusing on what it is that they're capable of versus what it is that maybe is not their gift and their skill. And I've got three of the most amazing children in the world, and I credit so much of it to being around this work and being able to be a student and a teacher of it. So it kind of brings me up to the present. I love what I'm doing. It's showing up in wonderful ways in every area of my life, with my health, with my family, with my business, and the opportunity to be here on the call with you today to share a little bit with your group.
Well, thank you so much. And I feel like your path and my path are similar in that you find mentors and teachers and the guru people, and then you realize that that impact is not just at the workshop or, you know, something that you take away from a book or a training on a CD or something. It really does come into your life, and you're right, it impacts us as parents. I have had the pleasure of helping to raise an absolutely phenomenal young lady from the time she was 12 and a half, and she's now 36, almost 37, and there's grandchildren involved now, and it's just the most amazing thing. And I know that part of my personal and professional development work that I have done kind of has rubbed off on some of what she does, and it's really nice. Don't you think that's kind of you know, it's like a legacy right there.
No, it's so true, and I just get a big smile on my face when I think about grandchildren. Not that I'm anywhere near ready for that in my own life, but you know, to think of that next generation coming along, and to think, you know, how blessed I feel to have been exposed to this work. You know, as parents, you know, I always joke about how they give us more training about how to strap the child into the car seat when we leave to the hospital than they do actually teaching us how to be effective parents. But to have had the blessing and the opportunity to learn so much about how to interact with other people and what makes a peak performer and the power of our thoughts and our beliefs, and to be able to share that with the kids and the next generation coming up, and to see it in literally every area of their lives. You know, I have three that are amazing students, they're athletes, they know, they each have their own specific areas that they're really passionate about, and they don't spend a lot of time doing what I see so many other kids doing as far as beating themselves up and comparing themselves to others and succumbing to their peers and things like that. They're capable and competent, which to me is just, it's a fabulous outcome. I'm happy for them, and I'm happy for me as a parent. So,
I think that's right. And, you know, the other thing that we wanted to instill in Carissa, and I know that she will do the same with her children, is being a good citizen. And
mm-hmm.
you know, what that means to certain, you know, to anybody is up to them, but I know what I mean by that, and she knows what I mean by that. And
right.
it is about responsibility and consequences, like you talked before.
Right.
One of the first things that I saw in your book, which is manifesting, oh, you know what, I don't have it right in front of me, forgive me,
Manifesting for non-gurus, yes.
How to quickly and easily attract lasting results. I want to talk about each one of those words, the manifesting and the non-guru in particular, because I have some interesting thoughts about that. But one of the very first quotes was from Fred Smith, founder of Federal Express.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You are the way you are because that's the way you want to be. If you really wanted to be any different, you would be in the process of changing right now." And is that not just about the truest thing ever?
Yeah, it's one of those that you can just read and look in the mirror and say, okay, it's true.
I did. I absolutely did, because, you know, we are at choice every single moment of every single day as to how it's all going to turn out. You know, there's certain things
right.
that we may think, gosh, you know, that's out of my control, but our attitude is always in our control. And I think that's coming
right.
out in your book also, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and it really is kind of the premise of the book, is to help people to get really clear about how our current attitudes and beliefs and thinking is literally, I believe, I don't believe this is too strong a word, I believe it's literally determining the results that we get in our life. And with that awareness comes the opportunity to make choices to change those beliefs, to change that way of thinking, if in fact we'd like to see different results in one or several areas of our life. So it absolutely is the premise of the book.
Right. And let's talk about the actual start of it, which is manifesting. What
mm-hmm.
does that mean exactly?
You know, it's funny. When I first was writing the book, my former business partner was very big on we had to know what we were going to call it before we could do anything, and I've never been like that. So the title was kind of an off-the-cuff kind of a thing, just to get myself going with the project. So manifesting for non-gurus was to look at the idea of manifesting and just think of it as attract results quickly and easily. And I believe that we're all manifesting every day. It's just a matter of whether we're manifesting the results that we really want. I believe that everyone is truly a master manifester. And again, the question is to look at what kind of results are showing up and look at whether it's a conscious choice, whether there's an element of intention with our master or with our manifesting, or whether we are in fact kind of at the whim of external influences and the people around us and the environments around us that are determining the results that show up in our lives. So manifesting means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but to me it's a very simple concept. It's about creating results, attracting results, and doing it quickly and easily. There's an element of effortlessness that's possible. I actually, in a more business environment, in a more practical environment, I kind of stay away from the word manifesting because it has kind of a little bit of a woo-woo kind of a feel to it. And another word that I use that I think really resonates more in the business environment and the real world, if you will, is the word mastery. And I love the feeling of that word, and it does seem to resonate more with people who are kind of focused on the more practical elements of our life, if we could achieve mastery in our life, that really resonates with people. But if you think about it, it's really the same thing. To be manifesting results, to be attracting the results we want quickly and easily, is really the same thing as mastery, to me anyway.
Well, I like that you chose the word mastery there. I don't know if you're familiar with Brendon Burchard. He's one of the top professional development, actually personal development, and I'm going to call him a guru too, ever, and he's only in his late 30s, I think it is. I don't know how old.
Yeah, he's a remarkable guy.
Oh, my gosh. And everything he talks about is around mastery.
Mm-hmm.
And it is absolutely something that resonates for me. I am actually a non-woo-woo kind of person, even though I'm doing a show called Pathways to Wisdom, but I don't have a lot of woo-woo in me. So when you change it to mastery, that goes, oh, I get that. So all the non-woo-woo people out there would appreciate that. But let's talk about the guru part, because
Right. For
me, guru is teacher. Guru is master, right?
Right.
So what is the non-guru in this
type? The non-guru idea was really twofold. It was, first of all, to really get people to connect to the idea that we can all manifest, that if we look at the idea of attracting results quickly and easily into our lives, that there's no prerequisite that requires us to move to India and live in a cave for 10 years and somehow become enlightened, that literally anybody and everybody, I consider myself just an average guy, and I feel like being around this work and learning the power of my own thoughts and my own beliefs and my own approach and how it really does dictate and determine the results I get has been so amazing for me. It's literally changed the results that I get in my life and the experience that I have in life. And that I didn't need to, go and, somehow become enlightened. So the guru idea is, I totally agree with you, the value of teachers, the value of ongoing learning. The guru idea to me, the part of guru that has kind of gone by the wayside, is that we don't need to rely on any particular teacher, any particular source of information in order to blindly follow. That there's so much information available to us. Arguably, the world has shifted from information only being available to a few to too much information being available to everybody. And we can just focus on making our own choices, choosing our own path, and creating the results that are really driven by what's most important to us, as opposed to following a guru, kind of blindly following. So that's what I mean. It's like a particular kind of a perspective on the word guru, and certainly not intended to take anything away from the valuable teachings you and I were talking before we started the formal call about the teachers that we've had and the mentors that we've had. And you know me, that's hugely important and hugely valuable. But what I would want people to do is really take, based on their own priorities, their own common sense, their own intuition, take the pieces that resonate most with you rather than saying, I'm going to be a Robert McPhee follower, I'm going to do everything he says, or I'm going to be a Jack Canfield or a Tony Robbins or a Stephen Covey or whoever it is, but to really be conscious and recognize that it's a choice and a decision for each one of us to make about which teachers to follow.
Well, what I just got from that is that, for me, it would be like the guru within. Listen to the guru within. Learn from the people who have come before, who have kind of walked the path and laid some groundwork for us, and then take it in. And in your book, you refer to journaling to slow down the process of manifesting. Can you tell me what you meant by that? Because I think that's part of it. If you slow it down, I'm going to answer my question for you and then let you answer it. But if you slow it down, then you can take it in. If you go fast, too fast, then you're not getting it.
Absolutely. And the journal that you're talking about, I was actually halfway through writing my book, and it was literally like a divine download for me. I've written things before, but there was something about this content that was so profound. It felt so on purpose for me. I was so passionate about it that I literally stopped halfway through writing the book and created a journal as a way for people to implement the work. And I joke with people that I did that because I wanted to prevent my book from becoming what's called shelf help. Have you heard of shelf help? Where people buy the book and they stick it on the shelf, but it never gets read, so it really doesn't do them any good. And it just felt too important to me, this this approach that was emerging for me was just too important. And so we created the journal. And what the journal does, just as you said, we're so busy. We have so much going on. Our minds are racing 100 miles an hour. And if we pause at some point in our day, I highly recommend the beginning of the day if it's possible, and just take 5 or 10 minutes to sit down with a journal and write what's up for us. Now, we have some very specific questions that we take people through, but even if we just pause and notice what thoughts are present, there's something about sitting down and writing that I notice, and maybe it's because I'm a slow writer, but my mind has to slow down in order to wait for my hand to catch up. So if I'm just capturing what thoughts are present for me in the morning, it almost forces me to slow down and to just be more present, to be more aware. And, you know, like I said, we have a very structured set of questions that we take people through to get them to a level of awareness and clarity and readiness to take inspired action. But even if people aren't using a structured system like that, if they're able to pause and just pay attention to those thoughts and capture them in a journal, just that act in and of itself will slow down that busy, crazy, racing mind that we seem to have in the morning and give us the opportunity to make some choices about which direction we want to head in, where we want to focus our time and attention for the coming day.
Right. The other thing that you mentioned in your setup, if you will, in your book about manifesting was attracting lasting results from nothing. And
mm-hmm.
I have to say that was jarring to me a little bit because I didn't have time to go inward and say, okay, what does that mean? So I can ask you, what does it mean?
There you go. Yeah. Well, I'll approach it from two different angles. One is the idea of lasting results, and I teach a model about comfort zones where, and you probably saw this in the book, it's in the book and in the journal because I feel it's so important for people to understand that one of the huge issues that blocks us from achieving the results that we want is that we get caught up in comfort zones. And I think everyone on the call, everyone listening to this, has heard the term comfort zone, but I would venture to say that most people really don't understand what a comfort zone is. And we have a really simple way of explaining comfort zones in the sense that a comfort zone occurs when our beliefs about who we are match the results that are showing up in our lives. So if I'm overweight and out of shape, and I've adopted that belief that that's a part of who I am, even though I know I should exercise more, even though I know I should eat better, there's a part of me that just feels comfortable and safe in that place. So a lot of the work that we're doing is really focused on getting people to change their beliefs about who they are, to adopt a new belief, to make a declaration. In this case, it might be something like, I am healthy and fit. And just that declaration will make them uncomfortable because, again, it will take them out of their comfort zone because the declaration doesn't match with the results they're getting. But if a person starts with their belief about who they are and allows their thoughts and their ideas to come from that new belief and allows those thoughts and ideas to generate the actions that create new results, if they're willing to stick with it for a period of time, and this is another value of journaling is to create that period of time, what ends up happening is that over a period of time, they create a new result called, you know, losing some weight, getting in shape, increasing their energy level, whatever it might be, that matches that declaration they made, that declaration of I am healthy and fit, and they've created a new comfort zone. They've literally created a situation where they can be comfortable being healthy and fit, whereas before, when they were just trying to change the result without changing their belief about who they are, then they were uncomfortable and they tended to be drawn back to what they were doing before. So that's the idea of lasting results. To me, that is the biggest key to creating lasting results, is to make sure that we're attracting results that are in alignment with our beliefs about who we really are, and recognizing that if we are holding on to beliefs that really don't serve us, that it is absolutely possible. It doesn't happen overnight, but it is absolutely possible to shift those beliefs and to create beliefs and approaches and ideas and thoughts that really do serve us. So that's the idea of creating lasting results. And then the idea of creating those results from nothing is really, I think, the piece that kind of gets people to kind of turn their head to the side a little bit and go, well, wait a minute, what do you mean create them from nothing? But what I always ask people is, well, where does any result come from? You know, where does, you know, the house that we build, the car that we buy, anything, where does it really come from? It comes from initially an idea, an insight, an intuition. It comes from, if we look at this kind of in terms of quantum physics, and I'm no quantum physicist, but if you look at anything, any object, any person, any plant, whatever it might be, if you look at it closely enough, if you drill down deep enough, it's all the same stuff. It's all just energy. And there's a great movie, I forget what it's called, but it starts with a little picnic scene in Chicago, and then it goes out into space as far as you can go, and you realize that it's just energy. And then it drills down, into the scene as far as you can go, and you realize it's just energy. So it's all the same stuff. And when we think about manifesting, it really is about attracting results and bringing it about from just an idea. It starts with an idea. And that's what I mean by manifesting results, meaning lasting results from nothing. That's exactly what we're referring to. And I think you could also look at it kind of the other way and say, not just as it is from nothing, it is from everything. Because, again, in terms of quantum physics, it's all the same stuff. It's energy all rearranged and moved around. That's what we mean by that.
I understand. So you're saying that it starts with an idea, and then it sounds mm-hmm. like that it's the difference between intention versus whim as to whether you have success.
Well,
or obviously, by the way, you go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I would say in terms of lasting success, and we see people all the time who create results on a whim. We see people all the time who create results being pushed by someone else. You know, their boss is putting them on a deadline, or their wife is yelling at them, or, whatever it might be. We can absolutely take action and create results based on what I call an external influence. But the other way that you're talking about here, with intention, with conscious choice, to me, is the way to create a life that is filled with the results we want and also the experience that we want. One of the things that breaks my heart just looking around the world around me so much of the time is we see people who, in many cases, are creating the results you might think they want, but they're not having the experience they want. We see people who are making a lot of money, and maybe they've got a successful business, but they've let their health and their relationships slide. Or we see people who are so focused on getting themselves healthy and fit that they've forgot that they need to earn a living, or whatever it might be, and they're not having the experience of life that they really want. So when we talk about manifesting, when we talk about really getting clear about who we really are and what our intended results are, what choices we're making about what intentions to focus our attention on, we're going to really focus not just on the result, but on the experience that gets created.
I understand. I do understand that difference. Now, I know that you've worked with a lot of people through time when you were working with Jack Canfield, for example. Would
mm-hmm.
that be part of where this mastery and manifesting for non-gurus came from, your work?
Yes, it really did. And you mentioned the work I was doing with Jack, and that really was the core. I was running a year-long coaching program for Jack. We had groups of 20 people or so who were in these coaching groups, and I was the director of them. And it was my responsibility over the course of the year to help those people get the results that they signed up for. If they wanted to build their business, my role was to make sure they were building their business. If they wanted to repair or find the relationships that would really work for them, that was my role. And what I found was that there were some people, and I know anyone who's listening to this has seen these people, they just make it look easy, They just have that easy and effortless, and all the resources they need seem to just show up when they need it, and all the ideas and the help is all there, and it just is like one thing after another. And then there were other people who seemed to get themselves stuck. And this opportunity to run this coaching program for 4 years gave me the chance to literally be in the middle of a laboratory and really see for myself what got people stuck. And to be in a position to help them, I had to not only identify what got them stuck, but help get them unstuck. And the fascinating thing was that over and over again, there were just a few areas where people seemed to get themselves stuck. And this is literally where the five steps of our manifesting approach emerged from, because I realized that when things weren't working well for people, when they were stuck, when things were not going the way they wanted them to go, I could look at it and see, were they really clear about who they are? Did they have that sense of self, a sense of values and what's most important to them? Because all the people who it was really easy for, they had that. The second question was, were they really clear about their intentions? Did they have clear, specific, measurable goals? And again, the people who were making it look easy, they always did. They were always really clear about their goals. The third step was about whether they were consistently connected to the feelings and emotions that they most wanted to experience, the feelings and emotions that really supported them versus the feelings and emotions that took them off course, that were not the feelings that they wanted to be experiencing. The fourth thing I would look at was, were they getting caught up in attachments? Were they spending their time and their energy focusing their thoughts and their beliefs in ways that weren't serving them? These are things like worrying about what other people will think, trying to figure out how, judging other people, judging ourselves, being, you know, feeling like it needs to happen now. All those kinds of things showed up as attachments, and they would get people stuck. And the people who were making it look easy, they just didn't go there. They would just, you know, other people will think what other people will think. This is what I'm here to do, and I'm doing it, that kind of thing. And then the final step was inspired action. And one of the funny things about manifesting is it kind of gets bad rap, like somehow I can sit on the couch and meditate my way to success if I just light the right number of candles and put on the right music and chant the right mantra, then all the results I want will come knocking on my door. And I always try and make it really clear to people that that's not at all what I mean by manifesting. And this fifth step of our manifesting approach, which is about taking inspired action, hopefully proves that. Because we see over and over again, in order to attract the results that we really want in our lives, we've got to get out there and get into action. And again, the people who make it look easy, they do that. They're out there. They're in the game. They're engaged. They're trying things. Some of them work, and they do more of that. Some things don't work. They do less of that. But they're actively engaged in the process. So the people who were really clear about who they were, clear about their intentions, connected to the feelings and emotions that they most wanted to experience, they were letting go of attachments and taking inspired action, life was working beautifully. And the people who were stuck in one of those areas were the people that I was in a position to be able to help by taking a look at that area, figuring out, you know, what was the intention that they needed to get clear about, or what was the attachment that was showing up, or why weren't they taking action, whatever it might be. But it literally, that was how these five steps of the manifesting approach emerged, was out of working with people in that year-long coaching program.
Well, I'd like to speak about number five first, taking inspired action, because I wrote a note when you were saying that I believe it is okay to fail forward. And if you don't try something, you don't know if you'll succeed or fail. But if you just don't do it, and I know that a lot of people in Jack Canfield's bestseller Blueprint course, which I am not taking but I know a lot about, I know that some of them have said, I did not write for 11 years, even though I knew a book was in me, because I was afraid someone might not like it, you know, or I was afraid that my results would not be what was expected. And that means that they didn't do anything, no inspired action. So I think it's okay to just go out there and give it your best shot and learn from that, don't you?
I absolutely do, and you're touching on what I call our fourth step there with the attachments that show up and prevent people from taking action, like you said, with people who know that they have a book in them, but they're reluctant to write because they're worried about what someone else will think. And, you know, to me, it breaks my heart because, you know, when you have a book in you, when you have a message to share, and I back up all the way to the beginning of this approach. It's who you are. The people who are in this program you're talking about, a part of who they are is this book that they have in them. And it is an intention for them that they want to get this book created. And if they really stop and think about how they'll feel when that book is done and it's out there and they're sharing their message, it's got to be a great feeling. And yet they're letting what someone else will think. And it's not even what someone else will think. It's just their speculation about what someone else might think, and they're letting that get in their way, which totally breaks my heart. And I love working with people to get them to see what they're doing and also to get them to connect to the other steps of what I teach, because a person who connects more deeply to who they really are and connects more powerfully to their intention, to what's really important to them, to the chosen goal, and then connects to the feeling and emotion that they most want to experience, all of a sudden what my mother is going to think isn't quite so important, you know, but we don't go there. We don't really look at it from that perspective. A lot of people get stuck in that place called, you know, what will my boss think, or what will my spouse think, or what will my parent think, or whatever it might be. So it's really fun to help people get beyond that. And I totally agree with you that on some level, the idea of taking action, you know, sometimes it works out great and sometimes it doesn't. But it is absolutely, that's the way it works. It is the game. We go out, we get into action, we try things. You know, I follow Jack's model of teaching a very simple concept called you try something. If it works, by all means, keep doing it. And if it doesn't, by all means, stop. And, you know, people get trapped in either one of those. They try something that works and then they stop doing it. Or, you know, even crazier on some level is they try something and it doesn't work and they keep doing it. But you do have to, you're absolutely right, you have to get out there and get in the game and be willing to try something. I think the movie Star Wars gave trying a bad name, you know, that whole scene with, I think, was it Yoda who said, you know, there is no try, there is only do or do not. And I get the message there, but what I tell people is if you're trying with a negative expectation, you know, any parent can tell you, they've had their kid at some point go, okay, I'll try. And that's the kind of trying that doesn't work. Like if you're trying with a negative expectation, you're trying something just because someone else is telling you you should do it, I'm with Yoda on that one. Don't bother. But if you're trying with a positive expectation, if you really do see the possibility and you see that it absolutely can happen and you're willing to get out there and try something and see if this is what works, knowing that if it does, great. And if it doesn't, you're going to keep trying. I mean, Jack and Mark, they had 144 publishers say no to them for Chicken Soup for the Soul. And that's called trying. You know, they kept trying. They kept taking action. And they've sold now more than 500 million books.
Wow.
500 million books. And, you know, how many of us, you know, if we each look in the mirror and tell the truth, how many of us would have kept going through 50 no's? 75 no's, 100 no's, 144 no's. How many of us would really do that? And it's very rare that someone would do that. And that's why it's so rare, I think, that someone gets to that level where they sell 500 million books, because it takes sometimes that level of passion and commitment, and no matter what, I'm going to make it happen.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, when you're talking about setting the intention, which you've mentioned several times here, because that really is such a key part of this, in your book, you say, set the intention and then ask three questions. Is it possible? Is it okay? Are you ready? Is the part about is it okay, that question about is my mother going to think it's a terrible idea, or is there more to it?
Well, there is a little bit more to it, but it really does. I mean, you know, we look at this as a very linear approach. You know, it's five steps, and we start with number one, and we move to number five. And the reality is they very much overlap. And you're absolutely right that this question about is it okay is very closely connected to the attachments that show up. And these three clarifying questions that you're talking about are, again, designed to help people make sure they're not stuck. Sometimes people set intentions with the best of intentions, you know, wanting, you know, something desperately in some cases, but they really don't pay attention to their own attitudes and beliefs about that intention. And I see over and over again that people set goals that either they don't believe are possible, in which case I believe they're stuck. You know, if we set a goal, you know, if I set a goal and really got let myself get unhealthy and I set a goal, I'm going to lose 100 pounds. And I ask, and somebody asked me rather, is that possible? And I'm really not sure whether it is possible, then I think I'm stuck. And so that's the purpose of asking these questions. Is it possible? To make sure that we know, we don't have to know everything about how it's going to happen or have it all figured out, but to me there's something really empowering when we say, yes, it's possible. It's possible for me to be in that kind of relationship. It's possible for me to be in that kind of physical health. It's possible for me to earn that amount of money. I don't know how, but I know it's possible. Look, he did it. I can do it. I know it's possible. And then we're in the game. It's you know, game on, and we're going to be much more likely to get into action. That second question, is it okay, as you said, is very often connected to what other people will think. But it's also connected to just how we feel about it. Like, does that create the feeling and emotional experience that we really want? When I imagine earning, you know, twice the amount of money that I'm earning right now, what comes up for me? Is that okay? I mean, I deal with people often who are setting themselves income goals that are two or three times more than their parents ever made. And for some people, that's not okay. And again, we go back and we say, okay, if this is on purpose for you, if this is in alignment with who you really are, if it's making the contribution that you're here to make, and if it's creating the feeling and emotional experience that you really want to be having, isn't that what your parents would want for you? And all of a sudden, someone will go, well, of course. You know, and that whole concern about what someone else will think. Now mom's on my side instead of, oh, my God, what will my mother think if I'm earning more money than dad ever did, whatever. So that's kind of the nature of, is it okay? And then that third clarifying question, I love that one the best because it actually emerged kind of late in the process of developing this work because people were manifesting results so quickly sometimes. So when we really do get clear, when we really do get focused, when we do really do connect on a feeling and emotional level, it's pretty startling how quickly results can show up sometimes. And I would see over and over again that sometimes people really weren't ready. They might not be ready for the amount of business that was showing up for them. I remember a client I had who was a coach, and she wanted 20 new coaching clients. And that was her goal. That was her intention. She used this approach. She got really clear. She got out. She got into action. And she called the company about doing some coaching for their employees. And they said, great, we'd like you to coach 25 of our employees. And she went, oh, no, I'm not ready for that. You know, it's just me. I don't have the systems. I don't have the support in place. So it would have been really helpful for her to make sure she was ready before she went out and made that request. And there's also an emotional side to the readiness, to, again, connect to the feeling and emotional side of this and make sure that, you know, I'm really going to be feeling the way I want to feel if I have that number of clients or if I've lost the weight or if I'm earning the money, whatever it is. So if we get a loud, resounding yes to yes, it's possible, yes, it's okay, and yes, I'm ready, then we find that people are really ready to move forward with pursuing
right.
that intention and getting themselves into action.
Well, it sounds like for me, is it possible and is it okay have to do with whether or not it lines up with my values, and
mm-hmm.
am I ready has to do with strength of character, self-belief, and preparation.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I think you can feel as you ask those questions, the difference between a no and a yes really determines whether we're ready to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's important to be honest. You know, it's one of those questions where we kind of know the answer we're looking for, but it's more important to be honest because it's much better. Like, and again, I'll use health and weight loss as an example. If we work with someone and they're really out of shape and they want to lose 100 pounds, and I ask them, "Is it possible?" And they say, "Well, I don't know. I've tried before. It's really been hard." You know, now they're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'll do with that person is I'll say, well, what about 10 pounds? What if the goal is 10 pounds? Could you lose 10 pounds? And then, oh, yeah, sure, I could lose 10 pounds. So if I just, you know, spent 2 weeks and I stopped drinking soda and, you know, eating snacks before I went to bed, I'd lose 10 pounds. Easy, no problem. And I say, perfect. Let's make your goal 10 pounds because they're already in action. Right now, they're already making their plan. They know exactly what to do. Their action is to stop drinking soda and to stop eating snacks before they go to bed. They know what to do. They're ready to get into action. And as best I can tell, there is absolutely no way to lose 100 pounds without going through 10 first. So whether it's a weight loss goal or an income goal, I find it so much more powerful to set a goal that is realistic and attainable. We know we can do it. Maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, which is great, but not so much of a stretch that it gets us to that place where we're spending all of our time and attention in a conversation about whether we can do it. Well, I don't know. Maybe I can do it. How would I do that? I have to. Meanwhile, we're not doing it. You know, it's let's get in the game. Get all the way to that state of inspired action.
Well, how is this work different from what most people do when they're setting goals, which sounds like kind of what you were just going over, but maybe you can clarify, you know, very succinctly, what is the difference?
Well, in terms of you know, I usually answer this question when I'm speaking, and I've got all five of the steps that I described in this manifesting approach up on the screen, and I'll point out that what most people do, in my experience, when they get around goal setting, is that they start with what I describe as step number 2 you know, the goal setting and the intention, identifying the desired result. Here's how much weight I want to lose. Here's how much money I want to make. They set that intention. They identify their desired result, and then they skip right to step number five, which is inspired action. And they go out and they say, I'm going to do it. At this time, you know, January 1st, New Year's resolutions, I really mean it this time, that whole thing. And with the best of intentions, they go out and they're working hard and they're trying and they're putting effort into it and using their willpower and all that. And I see a couple of things that happen. One is, if you do that, you will create results. I mean, if you get out and you take action, no question, you will create results. But whether those results will last, I would seriously question. And more importantly, I think, it goes back to the experience. You know, are you having the experience that you really want to have? And what I find to be the most profound impact my work has on people is when they add those other three steps, and we talked about journaling as one way to do that. I actually have a guided meditation that I offer to people who purchase my book as just a bonus for people who are real visual or auditory learners. Sometimes that works best. But if you just took a few minutes a day and added the other three steps of really getting clear about who you are, what's most important to you, making sure that your intentions, your goals are in alignment with who you really are and the contribution you're here to make. If you took a few minutes to connect to the feelings and emotions that you really want to experience, when I double my income or when I lose the weight, how will I feel? There's something so powerful about connecting to that. And then if we pay attention to what are the attachments that are showing up, and become better at letting go of those attachments before we take action, we're still ending up in the same place. We're still taking action. We might even be taking the same actions. But my experience is that if you're taking those actions from that place of clarity about who you are, connection to feeling, and having let go of attachments, you're on a much faster train. You're not dragging those anchors along. You're not having to rely on willpower and hard work and effort and, you know, make it happen. You're just inspired. I mean, we call it inspired action for a reason. And again, it goes back to those people who make it look easy. These people are in action. They are busy. They're out there working it. But they've got a big smile on their face. They're having a great time. They're sharing their experience with other people. They love what they're doing. And they really do make it look easy. So that's, to me, the difference between what most people do is set a goal, take action, versus the approach we teach, which is take just a little bit of time to connect to those other three steps.
Well, you are absolutely right. In particular, the who I am, I'm right there with you on that one, but the how will I feel?
Mm-hmm.
As a book coach and publisher, I actually help people figure out the answer to that question, because that can get them out of, A, fear of writing the book in the first place, and B,
right,
get moving along, you know. But one time I had a occasion to listen to a guided meditation with Lynn Klippel. And she had all of us kind of go into a meditative state for a few minutes and imagine being on the other end of a landscape bridge. You know, I'm on one side and my reader is on the other. And mm-hmm. I'm walking across the bridge holding my book. And the person knows that that's what I have. And they've been waiting for it. And walking across the bridge and having that sense, whatever it is for you. And it was amazing because it made me realize I have a couple of books that I've been playing with that I need to get done, because when I imagine my reader waiting for my work, I know for a fact that they are going to be enriched, excited, happy, you know, and I will be too. So
right,
that's a piece that I think is very important. How will I feel when it's done?
It's so huge, and I think I describe it as the simplest step of the approach I teach, and I shine a bright light on it because it's the easiest one to overlook because it is so simple. But I believe that those the feelings and emotions are literally the language of the law of attraction. You know, we work with affirmations and visualization, and I see a lot of people that have learned about affirmation and visualization. I believe it's a very powerful tool, but I believe without taking it to the level of feeling and emotion, that it just doesn't work the same way. You know, I see people who have a pocket full of 3x5 cards, and, you know, they read their affirmations every day, and they do their visualizations, and they come up to me, and they're frustrated, and they're angry, and they're stressed out because they're not getting results. And say, you know, I read these cards every single day, and I'm doing my visualizations just like you taught me, and it's not working. What's wrong? And I'm thinking to myself, what is the feeling and emotional experience that this person is having around their visualization and their affirmation? They're connected to stress and anxiety and fear. And to me, that's like sending a message to the universe saying, please send me more stress, anxiety, and fear. And you know, and again, with the best of intentions, they're following that instruction. They're doing, you know, the best they can, and you know, with the best of intentions. But they're leaving out that critical step of pausing and just saying, you know, when I've earned the money, how will that feel? And my experience is, and again, this is such the powerful part of journaling, is if I ask you to write down 5 words that will describe how you will feel when you've doubled your income, as you're writing those words, how can you help but not just even for a couple of seconds connect to that feeling? As you're writing the word excited, you will feel excited. As you write the word joy, you will feel the joy. As you write the word calm, you'll feel calm. You know, whatever the words are that come up for you. And it's that message, I believe, that also goes directly to the universe that says, please send me more.
Mm-hmm.
Joy, excitement, calm, peace. And that's where I get the phone calls and the emails that are absolutely my favorite. I tell people my favorite emails and voicemails are the ones that start with the words, you won't believe what happened. And it's always the people who took the time to connect to the feeling and emotion. All of a sudden their phone rang, or all of a sudden they met this person at work, or, you know, who knows what happened. But it's that, you know, that surprising result that comes from making that request, connecting on an energetic level to the feeling and emotion that we most want to experience, and that's where magic can really happen.
Absolutely. Well, there's 2 things that I would like to accomplish before we close the show. First of all, I would like for you to let people know how they can get hold of you, how they can enjoy more of your work. Whatever you'd like to say, you're welcome to do so. And then I would like to talk about the Spirit Spectacular that you are part of on September 8th, Saturday, at the Unity of Phoenix, Unity of Phoenix, that's what it's called. So please tell us about your work and how we can get more out of you.
I love the way you put that. How can we get more out of you? The simplest place to go, we've talked about this word manifesting. If people go to the website manifestingbook.com, that'll take you into my website. It'll actually land you on the page where my book resides. If people are interested in getting the book and the journal that we've talked about, I'll tell you a little secret. If you actually click on the image of the book rather than the button that says buy here, the book is normally $14.95. The journal is $20. We normally sell them as a set for $25. But if your audience clicks on the image of the book, they'll get taken to a link that'll take them to an offer for the book and journal together for $20. It'll be signed by me. It'll actually come out of my office. And it will also include that meditation that I talked about and another audio that teaches people how to get the most from the journal. So, and then once you're in the website, you can poke around and see what else we do about coaching and live events and mastermind groups and that type of thing that we do. So I'm easy to find through manifestingbook.com. And, yes, I'm really excited that the event in September, the September 8th event, which is the Spirit Spectacular at the Unity of Phoenix, is what connected you and I, which I appreciate. That was a great start, and we're not even at the event yet. And we really do. We have a fabulous lineup of people. It's an all-day event. I have the honor of kind of heading it off, where I'll be talking about some of the same things that we talked about today. We'll be doing some experiential work around some of these ideas. And then we'll be following up with some other speakers that are going to touch on financial specifically. They're going to touch on health and wellness issues, all sorts of different approaches. So people are going to get to look at this whole idea of creating the life that we really want to create from a number of different angles. And a couple of the speakers I don't know personally, but looking at their bios, I'm really excited to be there myself. I'm planning, like I said, I'm the first speaker in the morning, but I'm planning on being there all day long to hear the other speakers. And a couple of the speakers I do know, and I'm still planning on being there to hear them speak because I know they're brilliant and talented. So it's going to be a great day. Again, it's Unity of Phoenix. There's a telephone number, 602-978-3200, or the website is unityphx.org. and plenty of information. You can also just Google Unity of Phoenix and you'll find it. But it's going to be a fabulous event. I'm actually from San Diego, California. I'm looking forward to being out there. We're going to be out there for a couple of days, actually, enjoying the whole experience of connecting to this remarkable group of people.
Well, I'm going to be there as well, so I will actually be able to shake your hand and give you a hug and continue our conversation in person. I'm very excited about that.
Perfect, yeah. We don't do the handshake thing too well once we get into this work in depth. And
I know.
One of the things I learned from Jack is the power of a hug. And the human connection that we're all craving on such a deep level is so powerful. We in the week-long workshops that I used to do with Jack, each day we had an exercise that was very simple. It was called Stand Up and Get Some Hugs. And to see a group of people come in who are total strangers on the first day of a seven-day training, and then over the course of 7 days, you know, those first hugs are a little rough, but by the end of the week, it's just like you're getting these just soft, nurturing, comforting hugs that are just so what we crave and what most of us don't get enough of in our life. So you can count on a hug, not a handshake for me.
I actually, as soon as I said handshake, I knew that was not what I wanted anyway, so we're all on the
same
page.
That's it, though, right? I mean, my dad still does that when I go home, and, you know, he'll reach out his hand and, you know, ready to give me the handshake, and they'll go, oh, yeah, you know, you're doing that personal work stuff, I got to hug you. Okay, you know, we'll pat on the back thing, but even he craves a hug.
That's funny. Well, I look forward to the Spirit Spectacular because they're also referring to it as a spa day for the soul. And I think
I love that.
Doesn't that just tell you a whole lot about what they've got planned?
It does. And it really, you know, it's what we deserve, too. Just as someone would go to the spa to kind of regenerate and nurture ourselves physically with our body, who could argue that it isn't just as important for our mind and just our general well-being to have the same kind of nurturing experience? And again, based on what I know of the people that are there, and gosh, my experience of working with the people at Unity to coordinate this and get ready for it has been so fabulous. They're just wonderful, wonderful people there. So I am really excited to be there and looking forward to meeting all the people that are going to be sharing the experience.
Absolutely. I think my last question, if you don't mind, is about the Transformational Leadership Council. That sounds very important. It sounds so necessary. Necessary.
It is. It's, you know, it's an amazing group of people. I actually, my first role with the group was to be the executive director. And people would ask me what I do, and I'd say, I'm the executive director of the Transformational Leadership Council. And I think it's the most important-sounding title that I have ever had in my entire life. And yet people would say, wow, that's impressive. What does that mean? You know, but people don't really know. It's still a relatively new organization. It was actually started by Jack Canfield. And it's a group of some of the most influential and not always the most well-known, but some of the most profound and brilliant speakers and authors and trainers and thought leaders on the planet. People like Jack and Hale Dwoskin, who wrote The Sedona Method, Paul Sheely and Pete Bissonnette, who started Learning Strategies, Lisa Nichols, who wrote, I'm forgetting her book title right now. She's done amazing work with teenagers for years and years, has a book called No Matter What, which is truly remarkable. Joe Vitale. I mean, the list just kind of goes on and on and on. And what happens for me when I get together with this group of people, it's consciously stayed small so it can remain intimate. But when I get together with this group of people, they meet for 5 days, twice a year. And what it reminds me of, what it always connects me to, is the fact that there truly is, I believe, a global shift in consciousness going on. That we've made tremendous progress in terms of our level of awareness and our ability to really create the kind of life that we really want to be living versus feeling like a victim. And when I'm around a group of people like this, it really is so powerful in terms of energizing. You know, I think for those of us that are out doing this work, sometimes we feel like the Lone Ranger. And yet when you're with a group of your peers, when you're with a group of people that share the same kind of passion for doing this work and opening people up to new possibilities and increasing their awareness, you really do remember that it is absolutely, you know, it's like those three clarifying questions we talked about. You know, if my goal, if my intention is a global shift in consciousness, I'll tell you, there's mornings I wake up where I wonder if that's really possible. you know, could that really happen with everything else that's going on in my day today? Can I really create a global shift in consciousness? But when I'm at the Transformational Leadership Council, when I'm with that group of people, it not only feels possible, but it feels certain. It just feels like it's absolutely happening. And there's actually some, I told you there's a kind of a conscious effort to keep the group small so that it is kind of intimate and the connections are really profound. But there's what's happening is because so many people wanted to be a part of it, there are regional groups showing up. So there's a Southern California group called the Association of Transformational Leaders. There's a group in the Northeast. There's another group in the Midwest. There's one actually starting in Europe right now. And what's happening is, again, to me, it's evidence of that global shift in consciousness. There's amazing speakers and authors and trainers and teachers out there who are reaching out and connecting with each other and supporting each other and sharing ideas and resources and insights. So that this work can get out there in bigger and better ways. And I'm actually part of not only the Transformational Leadership Council group, but the helped start the Southern California version, which we call SoCalATL, Association of Transformational Leaders. And I'll tell you, it's just as profound a group as the TLC group. It's the same kind of energy. It's that networking and connecting and learning and just remembering that you're not alone on this path, that you're not alone in doing this work. You're surrounded by this amazing group of like-minded and supportive and encouraging people. So I appreciate the question. If anyone is in this kind of business, if you're in any of those areas that I talked about, or, you know, I know you have a big audience in Arizona. I know there's some amazing people in Arizona, and maybe it's even possible coming out of this event that we're doing in September that it's the planting of a seed for an ATL group to emerge right there in the Phoenix area, which is absolutely possible.
Well, that's probably why I asked you, and I would just say, is it possible, is it okay, and are you ready? And my answer
yeah.
is yes, and yes, and yes. So I think that might be
huge.
The answer.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, again, with my experience working with the people at Unity, I think they would want to be a part of that based on what I know of the speakers that are going to be at the event, at least one of which I know is from Arizona. Several, I think, are actually from Arizona. They're local people. And these are exactly the kind of people that we want to surround ourselves with, that we want to stay connected to. And this will be a remarkable event on September 8th. And everyone I know will have a fabulous experience. To me, the game becomes how do we maintain it? How do we make it last? How do we keep those connections present so it's more of our day-to-day experience as opposed to some sort of a vacation from our day-to-day experience? And whether it's TLC or ATL, whatever it is, some sort of network, a mastermind group, some way of keeping that connection and keeping that momentum is something that I would want to support in any way I could.
Well, that's wonderful, and I so appreciate you saying that, and we'll certainly explore that as time goes on in the next month or so when the event comes along. But in the meantime, thank you so much for being my guest on Pathways to Wisdom. It has been a truly wonderful honor. I appreciate you very much.
Good. Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm looking forward to that hug in September, and who knows, maybe we'll talk in the meantime as well.
I think we will, and I'm just going to close the show by reminding people to stay relevant and vital by being inspired by something or many things. So the question is, what will your legacy be? Because you will leave one. Who are your friends and how do you play together? What activities support your happiness? What's new on your bucket list and what gets checked off? That is what will inspire you. So thank you again, Robert, and we will see you next time. Bye now, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Pathways to Wisdom is a production of Boomer and the Babe Incorporated. You can find out more about Boomer and the Babe Incorporated by visiting our website at boomerandthebabe.com.